Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at The Only Colors. Today is Wednesday, August 25th. And John, did you see the Spider-Man trailer?
I missed it. I was too focused on the College Game Day trailer that came out.
Well, I'll tell you about mine and you tell me about yours. So I'm guessing Big and Rich was involved somehow.
Actually, no. And the music was
Imagine Dragons.
Nope. It was actually, I don't want to go as far to say good, but it was not bad.
Well, I mean, if it wasn't Imagine Dragons, then it wasn't great.
It wasn't offensive. It was not distracting, I think, is where I'll land.
Yeah, that's not what I'm here for. I'll be honest with you. I want absurdity in every way. And if there's no Imagine Dragons, then I'm out. Yeah, well, I mean, I won't bore you to death with the Spider-Man stuff, but let me tell you, going to be a hell of a movie. And listen, there's this concept in that movie that's about the multiverse, alternate timelines. Imagine if things happen this way, then other, you know, different actions beget different results. Let me tell you, I tied this back to Michigan State. There were a few things that made me think, had one thing gone one way, maybe other things would have gone another. And it's maybe a little bit sad.
Why are we starting like this?
I don't know. It just felt like I was trying to tie it into a popular like pop culture reference. And then I realized I got dark kind of quick. But here we go. Let me try and transition here. We wanted to talk about how the Big Ten has formalized their alliance with several other conferences. Imagine had Nebraska gone to a different conference once upon a time, what alternate timeline we may be living in then. Boom.
Way to tie it back. My favorite part about this alliance is they had a big press conference today and they're like, oh, we're doing stuff. We are, all of us are aligned and we're going to be doing all kinds of stuff. And the SEC is not
you don't even know.
And everyone's like, what kind of stuff? And they're like, you know, we're going to be helping make the future different for the college football landscape. And we're like, oh, nice. Like what? And they're like, you know what? With our powers combined, we're this alliance. It's this landscape of college football is going to be changed forever. And I'm like, great. So can you give me a little more detail on that? The three conferences all together working alongside each other in unison will be changing the world forever. And the SEC is over here and they're like, say, yeah, they're not doing anything. Nothing. They're doing nothing. It's nothing.
Is this not just the Magicians Alliance from Arrested Development? We demand to be taken seriously.
That was the entire press conference. They're like, we're going to be doing scheduling stuff. And they're like, oh, so you're going to change the schedule, the stuff you have in place, you know, for non-cons for 10 years out. They're like, not really. They're like, so you're not the scheduling stuff. And they're like, but maybe for men's and women's basketball. They're like, yeah, you already do that. The Big Ten ACC challenge is a thing. Like, what are we doing? What are you talking about?
Do you think when they walked off, it was another pop culture reference like Michael Scott after he promises all those things at the convention? He just goes, I think that went pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. They definitely think they nailed it. Meanwhile, the Big 12 and ACC commissioners were not invited. I had to had to join via Skype like the rest of the dorks. And they're just besides themselves. So I don't know, man. Nothing happened. I was a little disappointed. I thought something cool was going to come of it, but who knows? Maybe they got more cooking. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm gonna guess they probably don't. just as a matter of following precedent here. Or maybe they'll just like slap a logo on a couple games a year and just be like, hey, this is an alliance game, you know?
Exactly. You know what they did? It's like the SEC was like, hey, we're going to add Texas and Oklahoma. And these three conferences were like, well, we are going to have Cal play waiting list in 2042.
So we're going to have him play in the middle. Yeah. We're going to play in Nebraska, which is where a Big Ten team is.
Yeah, so how do you feel about that?
Suck on that. It just means more.
Yeah. Also, it's just kind of like, I don't want to go as far to say it's almost like the anti-COVID conference. If the SEC is the COVID conference, like this is everyone. I would actually, speaking of, did you see what LSU did though today?
I did.
I would put them in my probably top 10 programs that most surprised me would come out first to say yes. That they were going to require vaccinations to come into a game. I mean,
if you had asked me to make a bottom 10,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure LSU would have been right in there, if not knocking on the door.
Absolutely. I mean, I was truly shocked. I was like, this feels like a very, I don't know, Michigan or Cal or
Stanford.
Stanford thing to do first, right? And Ivy League teams potentially even. No, LSU comes out of the gate and kind of lays the precedent, and everyone else is, we'll see if they meet the bar that LSU has set for proof of vaccination to come in games or negative tests. I would hedge to bet, and this is, jokes aside, football is something that for a lot of people in this country, it might be the reason, it might be the thing that pushes some over the top to get vaccinated. I mean that seriously. I mean,
yeah, I mean, you say it and my first reaction is to laugh, but like,
I know.
I'll put it this way. Like if a football coach were to ask somebody to get vaccinated, you'd probably listen to them. Or most people would probably listen to them more than they would listen to obviously like 100%. Real doctors and people that they should listen to.
100%. I mean, it is Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. I mean, got 100% vaccinated team. I mean, again, out of people and teams, they would have also been in my bottom 10. But yes. But the reason is, hopefully there are some good reasons too, but one of the reasons is it's a competitive disadvantage to not be.
Right? Yeah, like, absolutely.
Which leads us into the Big Ten announcing, you cancel a game because of a COVID problem, you forfeit. And I believe that's every major conference has taken on that stance. So no more, sorry guys, can't play, maybe we can reschedule. Or sorry guys, can't play, see you next year. It's you take an L and the other team gets a W. And that's reason enough to get as many people on your team in your program up to speed as a football guy stance, not from a this is the right thing to do for society right. stance.
I would like to retroactively apply that to 2020.
Oh, yeah.
And make the case that Michigan State actually went 4-5. I think that's fair.
Who was going to argue? Not me. We're in,
not on so this date.
It is done. Past, it's been second.
Wow, can you believe Mel Tucker won 4 games in his first year as Michigan State head coach? Incredible stuff, considering.
I mean, set the bar, right?
Just wow. But yeah, I think that's a good policy. I mean, for real, like, that, you know, it's also, I think the Big Ten probably looks at what happened with Ohio State last year and how they kind of had to, like, people were not convinced that they should have been where they were last year. You know what I mean? Like that they should have been the ones getting the shot in the playoff, despite clearly being one of the 4 best teams. And, you know, it almost kept them out of the playoff. And so I think that I would not be surprised at all if that had something to do with why they chose to go that route.
Yeah. I mean, and I know last year it was people just didn't know what we were doing in a lot of things. I think you could argue we still don't, to be fair.
Yes, you absolutely could argue that.
I know that to be true for me in everyday life.
Right.
As it relates to this situation, I think it makes a lot of sense to just say, look, we have a solution here. Just do it. And if you don't, then, you know, there are consequences for the team. So
Yeah.
You need to do after you learn bad information, right? So good on the conferences then. And hopefully MSU is not one of the teams that has to even consider that, because Mel Tucker stated today that they are up to about 95% vaccinated, I guess, of the entire program. My question is how it could not be 100%. And I say that because I thought Michigan State said to attend classes or be on campus this year, you had to be vaccinated.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there might be like a date in there, because I don't think students aren't back on campus yet, are they?
You had to have your first shot by August 31st. So,
well, then the time, the clock is ticking here for some of these fellas. And let's hope they can figure it out, because there's just, again, we're not here to get all political and stuff, but yeah, they should probably just get it.
Well, and the other piece, though, is Mel was asked, like, is this going to affect your two deep at all? And he said, he kind of avoided it, but more or less said, you know, we hope it doesn't come to that. So TBD on who, no idea, by the way, I'm not even.
Yeah.
No idea what the situation is. And yeah, like Mel says, you just hope it doesn't even come to that. So with that, we do know the two deep. For a handful of positions, the final positions for us to overview. Your favorite, yes. Mine too. We saved the favorite positions for last. You'll go first. How about with the tight ends? Because this is a position you hold near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, I think it says a lot about the kind of like what we chose to keep until the end. I think it says a couple things. First, it says that we totally forgot to include the tight ends with the pass catchers, which we've done, I think, all the other years that we've done this. So that's extremely on brand. And then we also saved the special teams and lumped them in with the tight ends, because punting is winning, as everybody knows. And it just felt right to keep these two groups together. So tight end, yes, a position I hold very near and dear to my heart. However, you could make a very real argument that it is the most influx and unsettled position on the entire team. Case in point, now I say that while also with the caveat that there is a ton of potential in this playing group. Lots and lots and lots that could come here. It's just going to be interesting out the gate kind of what takes place. Because right now, the starter earned, I would say, is Tyler Hunt. Mm-hmm. Everybody's favorite former punter. Again, any combination of punting and tight ending is a win in my book. But to his credit, I think it was kind of like a bit of a joke, to be honest, and really like an indictment on the talent on the roster last year, that he was in fact not only the starter, but just like easily the best option. Mm-hmm. Like, easily the most effective option on the entire team. And again, I think that says a lot about the state of the program last year. But to be honest with you, I can't imagine them really justifying going another route to start this year if no one has come out and blown the doors off. To Hunt's credit, he deserves it. I think one of the big things separating him is probably the fact that he's like a very willing blocker. And he's an effective short range pass catcher. Now, I think the long term vision for this position is significantly more than that. And I think you can see it as we get into some of these other guys here in the types of players that are being recruited to play this position, and sort of the archetype that we're seeing brought in. It translates away from that, 2 yards in a cloud of dirt, shoelace and gum type of approach that we're seeing here with Tyler Hunt today. But he is the in all likelihood the starter on day one. Behind him, the only other guy that I could really see getting an actual legitimate look to be that day one starter would be Trenton Gillison, who is now a redshirt junior. And despite all of the He is maybe the guy that, like, I've said this with other tight ends before, but like Trent Gilson, I was so ready to just anoint the savior, and he has done very, very little to back that up. Again, the fact that he can't beat out Tyler Hunt now, yeah, 2 years running, yeah, I think says a tremendous amount about him. Now, again, maybe this is the year that he figures it out and puts it all together. He's got all of the physical tools. He's got it all. I mean, he really has everything, which is why I think everybody, myself obviously very much included here, was so excited about him when he came in. Highly ranked recruit, yada, yada, yada. But he's right now looking like a backup. And behind him, I think things get – this is where things get very weird and interesting at the same time, because there are three names – that are kind of making waves. One of them being actually the converted, I think he was a safety when he was recruited, or maybe even a defensive end, but that's Parks Gissinger. Mm-hmm. He's actually made a handful of catches in some of these scrimmages that they were able to actually put on Twitter yesterday. So he's getting reps. Now, what that means for the long term, who knows? But he's getting reps. He's got great size. He's like 6'5". Appears to have decent hands.
6'7", 260
listed. 6'7". Excuse me. So,
which means
he's 6'3".
Yeah.
But yeah, he's got great size for the position. I think this is one of those like, hey, let's give it a shot. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But that's an interesting name. And then the two others that are three others, actually. Gosh, there's a lot of names here. Two newcomers, freshman Cameron Allen and transfer Malik Carr.
Mm-hmm.
Whether these guys end up as tight ends or they end up as kind of big receivers, I think will be really interesting over the next couple years. Again, I think when I was saying, you know, what they see where they see the position going and all those things at Michigan State, I think these two are perfect examples of that. They see big athletes. They want to use this position to move the ball down the field. Now you need to be able to block too, but I think when you see Cam Allen, you realize this guy's not in there to be your Josiah Scott or Josiah Price, like inline type of blocker. He's in there to make plays in the open field. And that's really exciting. It's not just Cam Allen, who's probably ultimately, I don't know if he'll redshirt necessarily, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's a four game and out type of guy, like some of the others we've alluded to. Another name here that I was just referring to is Malik Carr, the transfer from Purdue, former huge recruit. They showed a picture of the tight end group on Twitter the other day, and man, he stands out to the point that Colton Pouncey had to be like, yeah, number six is Malik Carr. Mm-hmm. Dude has all the size, all the athleticism, going to play basketball. So that kind of says everything you need to know from an athleticism standpoint. He is going to be physically, and I said Trenton Gillison has all the tools. Malik Carr has twice the set. We're talking about an extremely, extremely talented and gifted young man. So another guy that's going to have a huge opportunity. And then finally, we have my biggest baby boy. And that would be our young man, Connor Hayward, has finally moved away from halfback. And he is now running with the tight ends. Whether it works at all doesn't really even matter to me. The fact that it's happening makes me happy. This dude is one of the best blockers on the team. He has amazing hands, as we've all seen on several occasions over the last few years. He's not built like a tight end by any stretch, but it's nice to see a staff that's finally willing to look at his skill set and try to find a way to use it. And again, given just the general uncertainty around the position and maybe the staff trying to protect some eligibility for guys like Carr and Allen, I won't be surprised at all, especially in two tight end sets, if Connor Hayward ends up playing some tight end. I think of him more as like a gadget guy. That you kind of bring in, you know, on third downs or when you're trying to run something sort of weird. But it's nice to see that they're looking at his skill set and saying, okay, we think he can do this. Let's find a way to get him to use those skills. So it's a super weird group. There's like seven different guys that could end up playing. Yeah. But I would say the potential is pretty intriguing.
A lot of decent tight ends looking for someone to be better than that. You know, you want, as our friend Will Hunter will tell you, Tyler Hunt is perfectly serviceable and at times even decent. You want better than that. You know, there are guys on the roster that you would hope, because of their skill, size, athleticism, and build, could be better than that. And hoping, you continue to hope that someone takes that starting position, because that means that, you know, we've elevated the level of the position. So, you know, well, I don't know how this is the position that Mel Tucker came in saying he and Jay Johnson just would gush over. Austin loved it. So we'll see if it comes to fruition this year. Last year, as we know, Jay Johnson and that offensive playbook was very limited, and the offense in general was very limiting. So another year in the books, like to see a little more out of this position group.
I'll say one more thing. This is the biggest, and I feel like I've said this probably every single year the last like 4 or 5 years. This is the biggest X factor. And for an offense that, honestly, this year maybe less than others, they don't need as much help, I don't think, because there is a ton of talent, quite frankly, in the skill positions. But tight end is always one where if you have a great one, it causes so many problems for other teams.
Look at Iowa.
Every single year. And it's a big deal. I mean, it makes a huge difference for teams that have great ones. I mean, if you're able to have two great ones like they did with Fant and Hockenson a couple of years ago, that really sets you apart. I mean, look at Wisconsin every year turns in great tight ends. Alabama, there's tons and tons of examples. But if you're able to have a great tight end and use it effectively, it sets you apart as an offense. And makes you much, much more difficult to cover. And it puts linebackers in tough positions. And in college, linebackers are, if you've got a linebacker athletic enough to cover a good tight end, you've probably got a first round type player on your hands. So it's a really tough thing to find. And listen, if it's Tyler Hunt, if it's Gilson, if it's Allen, if it's Gissinger, if it's Carr, if it's Hayward, six guys there. We'd like to think that one of them can provide some level of stability. And to be honest with you, I'm really optimistic that one of them will, because if the guy in front of them can't, there are so many other bodies that they're going to probably roll through to try and make that work. I'd like to think they'd be able to find, you know, a place to stop that process at some point. So I'm borderline, I don't want to call it optimistic, but I think, you know, you might have the chance for somebody to be decent out of this group, which is not asking for a lot.
Exactly. And that's kind of, as you've heard, the position groups leading up to this one, we're not asking for a lot. Just better than awful is really the baseline we're looking for this offense. Truly. Just get to average, and this team can do so much more. You know, let's go to the third phase of the game, though. Special teams.
Yes.
Because last year, we may have forgotten. I'm sorry to bring back these memories. Last year was arguably, maybe inarguably, I don't know, the worst Michigan State special teams unit I've ever seen. It was incredibly subpar. And, you know, usually when you think of special teams, you think your head goes immediately to kicker and immediately to punter and or kick returner and punt returner. I mean, as a whole, this unit was terrible. These guys ranked under Ross L's first year, and we're calling out names because something's got to change this year. Spartans ranked 107th of 127 teams in kickoff return defense. They were worse at covering punts. They finished 121st of 127 teams in punt returns, allowing 17.1 yards per return. They gave up a pair of punt return touchdowns, one each by Iowa and Penn State, if you recall. Michigan State was one of only six teams in the entire nation to allow multiple punt return touchdowns. There was only six teams. It's like, what the hell? And to make it compound on this issue, it wasn't much better outside of our kicker. So we'll start with the kicker, Matt Coughlin, who was the only thing that held this from group from turning in an F. He single-handedly, McMuffin raised us up to a D overall. And because he made 9 of 12 kicks, including a career-long 51-yarder, all three of his misses were from 40-plus yards. So you got to give him a little wiggle room there. He handled 25 of the 27 kickoff attempts, 9 of which were touchbacks. And now, as a career, so this may surprise you, second in MSU program history in career field goals made with 64, third ever in field goal attempts at 85, fourth overall in field goal percentage at 75.3%, fifth in total points scored all time, 305, and he's made all 107 of his extra point attempts. McMuffin coming back was nothing short of massive because there's no one behind him. There is not a scholarship player behind him right now. And there's a reason, you know, to be fair, people left because he was coming back, but it's a lot. It makes you feel a lot better about him coming back than breaking in somebody new. So
now and he has incredible hair,
incredible mullet going on here, man.
Yeah. Not to be overlooked. I mean, again, for a team that's operating on the margins and a program that's not, you know, invincible in that regard, I think that you're right. He's up there in terms of impact with any of the other returnees, in my opinion. So yeah, that you're definitely not wrong about that. The thing that's scary is that next year, Jack Stone, 6-star kicker recruit for the record. Mm-hmm. That's right. Is going to likely be this. I mean, he'll be the only man for the job unless they get a grad transfer, which again, can't rule that out. So enjoy the 6th-year kicker while we can, because next year we're probably dealing with a true frosh.
If you want to go on Coughlin watch, he is 7 away from made field goals away from tying Brett Swenson for all time field goals made in Michigan State history. So
wow.
We'll keep that watch for you. And he is 83 extra points away from tying Michael Geiger for extra points made. I'll tell you what, if MSU scores 83 touchdowns this year, I would be beside myself.
I mean, 83 is what across how many games?
That would be 13? 7. That would be something if I would lose my goddamn mind. So so I don't think that's happening, and he is coming back for his 6th year. But we'll keep a watch on the field goals made for you, because he really has been very consistent. All things considered, as a 4 or 4 or 5 return. So let's fast forward to the punters. Last year was an adventure, and the only returning scholarship punter, if you don't want to include Tyler Hunt, is Bryce Berenger. Unfortunately, Michigan State finished 109th in net punting last year in the nation, averaging only 35.3 yards per attempt. That is not good. One of the reasons it's so bad is, as I already mentioned, they're giving up so many yards, 17.1 yards per return. Like, it's almost pointless to even punt at that point. And as we know,
never pointless to punt, John.
It's punting is winning. So this is really conflicting for me. As we mentioned, there are a couple preferred walk-ons on the team that have shown that they are capable. Evan Morris, also listed as tight end, so could be doing
double that,
like Tyler Hunt. Cody Waddle, who actually I believe I want to say was on the team a couple years ago. Regardless, we're in a tough spot here on the punting area, unless Bryce really grows. So I don't know what to expect here. You'd like to think that it improves.
So two things. I think from just the sheer punting ability, I'd like to think it can't get any worse, just in terms of sheer yardage. Mm-hmm. Now, I will also say that this, maybe not in a true importance way, like, but in terms of a sheer impact way, this is really where improving the talent on your roster makes a difference. Like this I think is where it really comes through, because you're not, I mean, ultimately special teams, the vast majority of the time is filled with the second and third stringers, freshmen, guys that you're just looking to get some game experience. When those are second and third stringers from teams like last year's team,
yeah,
it's not great. Now, when those second and third stringers are better athletes, faster athletes, there's a lot more room for error. This feels like an eternal problem at Michigan State. Like, it seems like every single year this is an issue, no matter how good the punter is. And I think that honestly could have something to do with just the way that Mark D'Antonio constructed his rosters, to be honest with you, trying to find those three-star scrappy guys doesn't always land you the best athletes. And it, when you get to the bottom 30 on the roster, is typically where it tends to show. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to make this, you know, massive impact this year, but, you know, we're talking about putting, you know, like guys like Chase Klein, who probably wasn't playing special teams, might end up playing special teams just to get him some snaps. Mm-hmm. Things like that. Some of these other, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Keon Coleman is out there trying to make plays. I won't be surprised if Connor Hayward is out there on special teams. You know, these are you're talking about actual sort of good to above average to good to great athletes that you just try to find a way to get them on the field. So I think that's one thing to look out for, is hopefully this is, and again, for a team playing the margins, this is the type of stuff you have to do well if you want to win games. Like if you're not going to have greatness and extreme talent at several positions, quarterback, receiver, offensive line, then you're going to need to win these little areas. And so that's what makes this if they're as bad on special teams this year as they were last year, things will get better overall, but like,
yeah,
it puts a ceiling on how much better you can get.
Totally. While we're at it, just breaking in a new long snapper. Just thought, you know, rains it pours here. Hank Pepper, Z Pepper, Hot Pepper, true freshman. No worries there. But there's a backup. There's a backup that you're interested in.
Hell yeah, there's a backup I'm interested in. Fellow Seaholm Maple, Michael Donovan. Oh, yeah. I really am glad that like the high school I went to is like, that's our contribution, is a backup long snapper. It really accurately, and listen, I know they've improved since I was there, but it is painfully on brand for the level of football that we were playing when I was going to school there, that this is our contribution to the future of athletics. So very excited about Michael Donovan. Let's get some good snaps going. The next down mule box, SummerSide.
Let's go, Mike. Let's fast forward to an area where there could be some opportunity. Kick returner and punt returner. So last year, Jalen Naylor, Jaden Reed saw the majority of it. You'd like to think that they might continue, but to your point earlier, you might not want them to get hit as much. So you might put in an athlete like a Keon Coleman. You might put in an athlete like Division II transfer, walk-on Justin White. Rarely would you consider putting a walk-on back in a game where he's actually touching the ball on purpose. Here's why you might consider it. Well, Michigan State hasn't returned a kickoff for a touchdown since 2014. They haven't returned a punt for a touchdown since 2011. First of all, how? That is crazy.
I just don't understand. I miss Keyshawn Martin so very much. And honestly, I'll say this. I think part of the reason is because they stopped playing Take It to the House on kickoffs.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of my favorite things that they did forever. Slip and slide. And they stopped doing that. And like, now that I'm hearing these numbers, it kind of makes sense.
It's 100% the reason. Also, Justin White, as I previously mentioned, did take it to the house back in his D2 days. He was a freshman at Colorado Mesa, in 2019, and he led all of Division II in kickoff return average at 38.1 yards per return. Now, the jump from Division II to Division I is very, very different. That said, with the stats we just provided you, let's see what this kid's got. He was the special teams player of the year in his conference, not only a 100-yard return touchdown, but he also blocked four kicks. So, I mean, hey, he might be a contributor on the special teams area. You got to find a role. But like we mentioned, there are a couple other athletes that you might see make them make their way onto the field just to get them touches. Keon Coleman, again, he just feels like the most likely option, right? You know, someone that just needs to get touches because he might be electric if he gets the ball.
I mean, I would say other names are Terry Lockett, Montori Foster. I think are two guys that I wouldn't be surprised if they got looks. Jordan Simmons, I wouldn't be shocked if he was back there. He certainly has the speed. And I think at this point, we kind of covered it in our running back preview. That's a crowded room, man. And Jordan Simmons is going to be he's going to have a really hard time getting touches. And it's a shame. Well, it's not a shame. It's a very good problem to have. But, I mean, he's behind. It seems like the hierarchy is for sure going to be, or almost definitely going to be, Walker, Elijah Collins, and then Harold Joyner. So those are three damn good players right in front of you. So, I mean, Simmons, if I was Simmons, I'd be putting my hand up being like, let me get back there. So a couple names to keep an eye on. I'm sure there's more that we aren't naming. But, again, the benefit of having more athleticism on your roster is you can give some of these guys touches and special teams.
So that's our preview. I know it sounded kind of a bummery, but we just love these positions so much. We just hold them to just the highest bar.
The highest standard.
You know, a lot of people, might tune out when the punt unit comes down to the field goal unit. They might be disappointed. Not us, not this podcast. Get hyped. And
that's when I tune in.
Turn up the volume, baby. So it's an interesting point you make. Jesting aside, the margin for error is so small with a team like this, with a bowl game as I think the goal this year. You want to be able to not be let down in the way this team was let down last year by this unit. They need to be ideally better than a net neutral, but again, just get to average, and then we can start to see some differences in the win and loss column, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think of it this way, like special teams, bad kickers, bad coverage, they bring down empires. I mean, Alabama is an example I always go to. They've been killed. They've been killed by bad special teams. Cost them seasons before. So imagine if a team that good and a program that good can get taken down by bad special teams play, like maybe not even like horrific special teams play, just bad special teams play. Imagine what it can do to a roster that's still trying to come together, a bunch of new faces that need every single snap that they can get to go their way, to go their way. I mean, that is truly what it comes down to, not to be hyperbolic, but it's a huge deal. I mean, these special teams can make absolutely make the difference, in a game or making it to a bowl game, quite frankly. So it's not sexy, but it is important.
It is Big Ten. And I think you laid it on pretty thick for the audience here. I think they're starting to believe, in how important special teams is. And that's the win here. That's the win. We're trying to make conversions. We're converting people here.
Just trust me.
All right. Should we take a break and then get to what the folks have been waiting for all summer, the Michigan State football season preview?
Oh, yeah. Here we go. Taking a break. Man, we're back.
Okay.
John, it's time.
We've been thinking about this for a long time. We needed to put it away, I think, at the end of last year. I think we were happy to put it away. We got it out, dusted it off, and we said, okay, what do we have? A brand new roster, by all things considered. A lot of new faces in the two deep. We got a schedule that hasn't changed three times since it was announced, like last year. And we got a game coming up next week at Northwestern here in Evanston. Sounds like it's going to be heavily populated by Spartans, as it always is, for a night game. here on ESPN Friday night. It's going to be a doozy. I got to think there's going to be a lot of pent up energy from fans, not just here, but around the nation, but especially, I would say, in Evanston.
Yeah, I mean, the fun part about seeing a game in Evanston as an opponent is it's a home game.
Yep.
There's no such thing as a Northwestern home game. But yeah, if we're going to start there, I mean, what an awesome way to begin your season. Night game, Friday night, keeping the Friday night tradition alive and getting to take on a Big Ten opponent that, that MSU honestly has like a little rivalry with. For whatever reason, these games always end up being important. Last year, Northwestern, obviously one of Michigan State's big wins in that it was one of their only wins. But Northwestern ranked very highly, was one of the more experienced teams in the entire country. I think the thing that kind of was insane to me that you told me right before we came on is that they're actually the leader in lost production. So they have the least amount of returning production in America. That, and we'll get into it more next week when we go through the actual team, that is not good for a program like Northwestern.
No, it is not. So, like you said, a great if you had to play a Big Ten game to start on the road, this is the one you want if you could pick.
Yep.
We'll keep going with the schedule preview here, just game by game, and then we'll start to talk about our projected win totals. But the next one's home game, Youngstown State, Saturday, 11 a.m. or excuse me, noon kickoff. Big Ten Network feels right. Now we're back in the groove of the football season. You'd like to think that this is one that you can start to see saw a lot of the depth being played. You hope this is not one that's taken to the wire. This is one you want to mark up as a W against an FCS team. All things considered, ideally the quarterback situation is solved the week prior, and now yes. we're just the reason a backup or the someone else is playing is because of the score. And that's the only reason.
Yeah, I would agree. I think to quickly go back to Northwestern, won't be surprised to see both quarterbacks play at all. I kind of expect it, to be honest. But yes, I think what you'd really like to see, to your point, is for whomever, is basically for a decision to be made in that game, if not before, because Youngstown State is one of the games that you look at on the schedule and you think, okay, that needs to be a win. Quite frankly, no disrespect to Youngstown State, but if this team wants to make a bowl game, if this team wants to win more of the games than they did a year ago, that's got to be a W. And I think it's a great opportunity to allow whomever the quarterback is to get reps against a team that they should be more talented than. Yep. And quite frankly, with the game they have coming up the following weekend, you can't really have uncertainty going down to Miami to play the Hurricanes.
Yeah, this one is, if you're going to go to a game, an away game, we talked about it last week, this is a place that I'd want to go, Coral Gables. This one at Miami, it's going to be early, which is good because Miami heat is very real. The average high in Miami, I think, during this time is above 86 before humidity. And it's the humidity that'll get you if you mm-hmm. didn't. This one could be on ABC if MSU were to, walk in 2-0, probably. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Shakes out. But Miami, a team that Michigan State's never beat. 0-4 all time. 0-4. Haven't played them since 89, where they're Miami's head coach. Dennis Erickson.
Oh.
Yeah.
How so, about that? That's a fun fact.
Fun fact, right? So, we'll do the game preview, the week leading up.
Yeah, here's what you need to know. You need to know Derek King is really good.
Really?
and if he is healthy after his torn ACL, you're talking about one of the premier players in college football. Miami will be ranked, assuming they don't lose a game. I don't know their schedule before this. Probably in the top 10. So huge opportunity for Mel to go in and make a statement.
Yeah, Miami is outside of Ohio State, probably the second best team that MSU would play this year. Is that fair?
Yeah, probably. I think that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, if Sam Howell wasn't at North Carolina, he'd be the best quarterback in the ACC. And it's not just him. They got Cameron Harris as a running back. They have a nice cornerback in Bubba Bolden, who's an amazing name, by the way. And yeah. A stud defensive end in Nesta Silvera. I believe that's how you say his name. So, I mean, they're stud the secondary, as we already talked about. They always have athletes that can touch when that touch the ball. It's just going to be
a really good team.
It's going to be
a really good
AU kind of game. And manage the clock. It's going to be like grind it out, limit possessions type of situation. Yeah. But as you mentioned, you know, playing a team early and especially early in the day, Miami, Florida doesn't draw very well. It's kind of a surprise maybe to some. They don't. So who knows? Maybe you catch them sleeping because, as you mentioned, this is going to be one of the tougher ones. Let me see who Miami plays the week prior, actually. They play Appalachian State, and they're going to be really – the Appalachian State is going to be decent this year. So who knows? It actually might be a bad thing. It's going to be a wake-up call for Miami probably.
Yeah.
but who knows? Maybe they wear them down a little bit too. So not easy. You know, that one's going to be – would be a shock, I think, to me if MSU were to pull that off.
Of course. But this is, it's kind of like when you draw up a schedule, like if you remember playing the old NCAA football games, like it's exactly where you want your first test, like especially for a team that you don't necessarily expect to be this, you know, groundbreaking operation, to give your team a test and a measuring stick early in the season, I think sets a big tone for going on. I mean, and I think just given where MSU is as a program, you don't necessarily have to win that game to consider it a win. You know what I mean? Like it could very well just, you've got to show up. You've got to fight. You've got to care. If you lose, you lose because it's a really good team you're playing. But at the end of the day, you want your team to go out there and compete. And I think that would be the biggest thing for me in this one would be for them to just not get housed the way that they got housed by good teams last year.
Absolutely. I mean, Miami, 91% of last year's returning production returns. That's 12th best.
Damn team. Good team. Damn good team.
Hey, and also one of a dark horse playoff team. You know, if you don't feel great about Clemson, sure. You know, why not? So moving forward, the next week, home game against Nebraska. This one's very interesting to me. I mean, this is another one of those games, just like Northwestern, where you feel like it's winnable. You know, this is a decent, not good Big Ten team, and you have them at home, and you have a coach that is not great. He's also desperate. Nebraska will be coming off an ass-kicking at Oklahoma the week prior.
Oof.
They have returning 71% of their returning production last year. That's 97th. Of 127 teams. So defense will be good for Nebraska. I will give them that. The Adrian Martinez experiment continues in Lincoln.
At what point is it no longer an experiment?
They just don't have another better option.
He's at least a junior, right?
I pray he's like a sixth year senior. They had one kid who just transferred? McCaffrey, right?
Yeah, Luke McCaffrey transferred.
He left because he couldn't win the job over Adrian Martinez. I mean, that kind of tells you everything you need to know.
What's the saddest part of that sentence?
All of it was just, it was depressing saying it. I have to take an antidepressant right now. I'm going to go get some Lexapro just saying that. but I think in Nebraska overall, this is the program that is so far past put up or shut up. Like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. They just have to improve. And unfortunately for them, they're just very mediocre in a lot of different areas, especially the skill positions. So this is an area you got to feel good. You're not going to get out-athleted in this one. And MSU got out-athleted a lot last year. They made up huge strides in those departments. But this is not a team that walks on the field and you should be overwhelmed by athletically. So you got to feel like you can compete in this one. You got to feel like maybe you can steal it as a home game.
Yeah, I think the first of all, I don't know that I look at it as I don't think this would be stealing one. I don't think Nebraska is going to be any good. I think Scott Frost is
bad phrasing.
The only thing I would say is he's staring down the barrel of getting fired after being the golden boy. There's a lot of Jim Harbaugh light type of vibes that you're getting from this team. They're in very similar situations. I would say it's like you said, it's put up or shut up. I think this is a winnable game for Michigan State. The part that scares me the most is that it's coming the week after they play Miami. So one of two things is going to be one of three things is going to be happening. They're either going to have beaten Miami, which is again, definitely the least likely of these scenarios I'm about to lay out, but they're going to beat Miami and then they're going to have to show up to play a team that's definitely worse than Miami. What will definitely be a noon kick. They're going to have to answer that bell and show that they can handle success, which no one on this team has really had the opportunity or ability to do thus far. They're going to have gotten their asses kicked and they're going to have to step up and say, hey, we're not going to let that shit happen again. Or they're probably the most likely scenario is that they're going to have fought really hard and just not quite been able to do it. And in that scenario, again, you've got to show up and play a team that you're not as jazzed up to play as you were the week before when you came out and gave it everything you had and ultimately came up short. So I think from a mental perspective, that's the one where this is a really interesting test.
You got to – Nebraska will be coming off of the similar ass-kicking or probable at Oklahoma, and then they have to travel to East Lansing. That's going to take a toll on them too. Mm-hmm. So you're right.
Absolutely.
It's not stealing one. This is where the home field advantage that was missed from every stadium last year is going to take place. I don't expect that MSU crowd to get too wild against Youngstown State, maybe just because it's good to be back. But this is a game where the crowd's going to be a factor. And hopefully you'd think it'd push MSU over the top.
Yeah. Yep. I agree.
Fast forward to the next week, Western Kentucky. This is the Hilltoppers come to town. Another night game. This one is going to be 7:30. So you got to feel pretty good if you're a student. Maybe if you're an old head, this one bums you out. But hey, have a Diet Coke. You'll be good. I'm excited for this one because this is going to be, regardless of the record, there's a lot of scenarios that could play out. You know, where is this team at? You got to look down the road and say you can have you're building up to something potentially starting with this team. You know, you like to break up the schedule in the fours. If you can beat Western Kentucky at home, which you'd think in a night game you could, and then you play at Rutgers, and then you play at Indiana, and then a bye game, and then Michigan. You gotta be building some momentum in those four games, and there's a nice crescendo, you know, to be reaching towards. So you almost need to reset after the Nebraska game, regardless of record, and just to like kind of get settled and start for another grind. Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, I think I look at this one similarly to the way that I look at the Youngstown State game, where this is a game you need to win. It's a game you need to win. And especially at this point in the calendar, more than anything to what you were saying, you don't just need to win. You need to show that you've come out of those first four games and you have an idea of what your strengths and weaknesses are. As coaches, you're ready to play to those, and you're like you said, building towards something bigger. So when I look at these first five games, and I actually will come back and do that later, but I think the theme through these first five is really I don't think any of them, Miami definitely aside. So for four of these first five, I look at and I see very real paths, if not likely paths, for MSU to win those games. But after those first five, to your point, two tough ones on the road, whether we want to admit it or not, at Rutgers is not what it used to be before Greg Schiano. Is that fair?
Yeah, but Rutgers is building something.
Right.
But I want to talk one more thing about Western Kentucky, and I'll let you talk Rutgers. Western Kentucky has a quarterback transfer from Houston Baptist, and his number one wide receiver both transferred to Western Kentucky. Now, they are not a pass and go type offense, but those two put up some wild numbers for Houston Baptist last year. Google that. It's kind of a fun ride. They sucked, but they definitely those. And it wasn't because of those two. They were putting up numbers. So I'm not saying that's a reason to be of necessary concern. It's something that they're going to be leaning on very heavily against Michigan State. So we'll see how well the secondary holds up. But I think I'm just interested to see who can if Michigan State is going to be a team that asserts itself and its type of gameplay, or if they're going to try be one of those teams that adapts to others and tries to beat them that way. And that's never usually a good thing for a team that's just not that talented top to bottom. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. You hope that MSU can dictate. I mean, that's what the good teams do. You allow yourself to play, or you play your style of ball and you control the game that way. And, you know, between pace, between the style of offense and defense, like your ability to get after the quarterback, your ability to make things uncomfortable for them, like you can control the pace in a lot of different ways and control the by winning special teams as well. You don't want to end up with a shoe on the other foot, that's for sure.
The good news is Western Kentucky plays Indiana the week prior. So they're going to be pulling out all the stops. They host Indiana. It's going to be their biggest home game in I don't know how long. So first of all, watch out, Hoosiers. Don't get caught napping. Two, as I mentioned, home game against the Big Ten team, they're pulling out all the stops. They're going to show their entire hand trying to beat Indiana.
So yeah, that's a great point.
You have that going for you. Playing them the next week, and also probably going to be a little beat up after playing a Big Ten opponent, one that beat the hell out of Michigan State in the trenches last year as well. So on to Piscataway, where we'll take on the Rutgers Scarlet Knights, who will have played Ohio State the week prior, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of timing, it seems like MSU and this theme will continue as we keep going. That's good. So you said this is at Rutgers, right?
That's the one you just alluded to.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. Not that you necessarily hopefully needed the help with that, you know what I mean? But, yeah, it's never bad to play a team the week after they play Ohio State, that's for sure. Listen, Rutgers, again, I don't know. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say that Rutgers is, you know, this powerhouse or anything like that. But, listen, you saw that they put together a somewhat competent team a year ago. And that alone, to me, makes them more dangerous than they were previously.
Absolutely.
And again, I haven't done my research into Rutgers just yet. I apologize. But, you know, in my opinion, if you're going to be that mid to upper crust of the Big Ten, these are games, again, that you have to go win. And it's not the recipe that it used to be. It's not you can't just take it for granted like you used to.
No. And I'll tell you a little bit about Rutgers. One thing to keep in mind, they're a year ahead of the rebuild as Michigan.
Yep.
And you never want to look at another team like Rutgers and say, that's the model. But I will say, but they did a great job last year. Greg Schiano did a great job last year, cobbling together a lot of Big Ten talent that could compete in the Big Ten from all around the country. And he made it work to the effect that they were competitive with a lot of teams, which is a huge step up for Rutgers, right? They beat us. I mean, they were ready, prepared. They put up points. You'd like to think that MSU doesn't turn the ball over seven times, I think is how it was last time and this year. And you'd like to think Michigan State has a talent advantage because of that. But Rutgers, as I mentioned, year two, they kind of pieced it together last year. This year, I think they're a little more confident in their roster. They returned 92% of returning production. That's ninth best in the country. And, you know, they have a damn good recruiting class. They have momentum going for them. That's top 15 right now in the country. And it's not just because they recruited a ton of guys. They have legit guys, like four-star dudes and a lot of them. So Schiano's building something over there. It would be good for Michigan State to not continue to chase. This is the year to surpass them, and this is the game to do it at Rutgers.
Agreed. All the way across the board. I mean, that's Yeah, you don't want to be chasing Rutgers in the rebuild wars, that's for sure.
Exactly. So fast forward to the next week at Indiana. It's going to be a noon kickoff, probably for the best. Indiana, tough team, the trendiest team, maybe not just in the Big Ten, but in the country. Indiana will be coming off a bye. Not great. They return almost 5 out of 6 of every guy's 83% of their returning production. That's 36th best in the country. They return arguably the most dynamic quarterback when healthy in the Big Ten. And they're always going to be a tough out now. I mean, they've established themselves. They're starting to recruit at a much better level. And Indiana is no longer the pushover that Rutgers was either. This is a program that bullied Michigan State last year, beat them, didn't even allow them to score. And it was MSU was outclassed in every level of that game. This will be a good measuring stick for the program, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, knowing you have that bye the next week, you can really go balls to the wall. I mean, this is a program that I don't think it's some bold thing to say that they've usurped Michigan State when it comes to your place in the Big Ten and like who, where you are as a program right now. This is a damn good program. This is another really good test at what I think could be a really good point in the schedule, potentially a big opportunity to build on something moving into kind of the home stretch of the season.
Yeah, this is one, but for me, I'm just going to see this score, this game, total yardage, everything is just going to tell you a lot about, as I mentioned, where MSU is at and how much further they need to go to compete to win. Because fortunately, as the middle tiers go, I think it's safe to say Indiana has passed up MSU.
Yeah.
And now you're scrambling to try to claw back. You hope that maybe Indiana gets caught looking ahead. They host Ohio State the next week. Ohio State's going to be undefeated that game. Who knows what Indiana's record is going to be? They have a damn hard schedule leading up to it. They play at Iowa. They host Cincinnati. I already mentioned they play at Western Kentucky, who I don't think is that great. But the fact that you have to go play a night game at Western Kentucky is who signed up for that, by the way.
Yeah.
Followed by playing at Penn State. I mean, you could conceivably be seeing a 2-3 Indiana team when Michigan State rolls into town. So who knows what plays out. But as I mentioned, they could be caught looking ahead if they string off a handful of those and it's going to be a top 10 matchup. So you have that going for Michigan State as they head into a bye after that game, which is probably good news because they host Michigan the week after. And, you never need to get up for that game, but having a bye week after, seven straight games. It's a good time to have a bye.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you always want the bye before you play Michigan. Let's not pretend like that's not something that, listen, whether you think this is a great Michigan team or not a great Michigan team, whatever it is, I can tell you one thing is for sure. It will be a desperate Michigan team. It is, and at this point in the season, who knows when it comes to what their record could be. I feel like they have a pretty manageable early part of their year, which makes me think that they're probably going to be sitting, in pretty good position coming into this game, feeling pretty good. You get to host them, which you absolutely love. Michigan, like you don't want to not take it seriously. She went toe to toe with them last year, beat them. You think you're a much better team this year. That's really far into the season, so we really have no idea where things shake out. But listen, this game is always 50-50, no matter how good either one of the sides are. You see that come to fruition every single year. And again, in a vacuum, this is a very winnable game, especially coming off of a bye against a team that's. Talk about roster flux. I mean, they don't know who's playing where at a lot of different positions. I mean, they're going to have some really good players like Daxton Hill and Aiden Hutchinson on defense. And they know there's a lot more. But it starts at the quarterback. And if Cade McNamara is not the guy, you know, where do you go? There's been so much damn turnover on that team. It's going to be interesting because I think they're kind of going into this year very stale after, like, the Harbaugh hype train seems to have fallen dead on his tracks. He's been made very expendable by taking a pay cut. It's going to be very interesting to see at this point in the season, 8 weeks in or whatever it is, like, are they still fighting, or are they thinking that they can do something? Like, I don't know. To me, this is going to be a fascinating game.
Yeah, I'd argue Harbaugh could be coaching for his job this game.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think this year he and Scott Frost have some very, very, very similar vibes where I think they're very much coaching for their jobs. I don't disagree with that at all.
And I'm not saying that if he wins this game, you know, he's guaranteed to keep his job. I'm just saying if you lose this game, probably means you lost some other ones. And
yeah, exactly.
And you're probably out the door. Next on the schedule is at Purdue. Another winnable one, you'd think.
This has Nebraska vibes to me. Same type of deal where you're at the end of the season. I think the only difference is that probably works in Michigan State's favor that it's the end of the season, because Purdue has probably lost a handful of games and probably isn't fighting for a whole lot at that point.
Probably a bowl game.
I mean, MSU probably has similar goals to Purdue at this stage. And maybe they're fighting for a bowl game. But I think the worry is that, again, either you lost to Michigan and you're down and you got to bounce back by going on the road to play a team that's beating you, or you beat Michigan and you got to contain that high and not get blindsided by a road game, a winnable road game.
Yeah, it's a tough one. The next one after that is going to be home hosting Maryland. Who knows where they're at? They have a huge gap in their floor to ceiling is maybe the widest one in the conference. I mean, you could convince me that they only win one game. Everything just falls apart. You could also convince me that they find a way to win eight. Like I think they have decent talent. They have a quarterback that's proven they can be good. I just don't know whatever to expect from chaos Maryland team.
Yeah, this is the one that I'm like, I'm not going to believe anything about Maryland until I see it with my own eyes. And even then, I'm not even sure how much I'm going to believe it. It's just, you just have no idea. You could tell me a million different things about Maryland, and I'd buy all of them, because like you said, I just have no idea how it all could go. But this late in the season, again, like, you wonder, what are they fighting for? You know what I mean?
Well, I'll tell you this. MSU wants to go bowling, and they'll need this one, because if you're trying to get number six at Ohio State or Penn State, as I'd try and fish it out of the Maryland game if I had to pick.
Yeah, I would agree, because that next one, I mean, again, this is probably just our opportunity to just stand in absolute awe of Ohio State. I will say, and I don't think it's going to matter. Truly, this is the game where if I could flip one team to be early in the season versus another, I would love to put Ohio State at the beginning of the year. They've got CJ Stroud, the freshman quarterback, who's going to be starting. And to me, that's the only thing that can keep Ohio State from being great. CJ Stroud, who also, by the way, ran for a 48-yard touchdown, you may recall, against Michigan State last year in his one, like, small snippet of playing time the entire season. So that's fun.
I was busy having a great time on Twitter. Sometimes when I get sad about Michigan State, I'll just post photos that make me laugh. So we had a good one going there, I think, deep into the fourth quarter of that one.
Yeah. But that's a load. I mean, you talk about teams that could win a national championship. I would probably put Ohio State a half step behind the elite of the elite. But I guess when you look around the country, there's a lot of new quarterbacks. Like the big powers that be: Clemson, new quarterback; Bama, new quarterback; Ohio State, new quarterback. The only one that's coming back that's a superstar that's at one of these massive programs is Spencer Rattler out at Oklahoma. So there's a lot up in the air. Ohio State undoubtedly will be fighting for the Big Ten at this point. So that's that's one again where you're going in playing with house money.
Oh yeah.
In that game, no matter what the record, I mean, Michigan State's not coming into that game undefeated or with one loss in all likelihood. So you're really gambling with house money. And hey, man, go in, cause a couple turnovers. Who knows what can happen? But in all likelihood, this is a drubbing.
We finish it out with the Land Grant Trophy. Pew 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 laser. Pew. You know, I wouldn't end the season any other way. It, you know, Penn State probably better than their 4-5 record last year. We'll see what they're playing for. You know, who knows if they sprung an upset against Ohio State and they're playing for the Big Ten East Championship. You know,
this is another one where things could go. I feel like every season's probably going to be this, but like this feels like a particularly big season for James Franklin. Because they were bad last year. And it feels like Penn State fans have been trying to get rid of him for a couple of years for whatever reason. And they have their excuse now. Like, because they've got that one bad season. And if he piles another one on top of it, then I could see them, you know, telling him to take a hike or making next year like the ultimate do or die when he's got to break in a new quarterback. Because I believe Sean Clifford is still the starter this year, is he not?
Is he gone? He is there. And kind of like Adrian Martinez, they just kind of keep waiting for him to pop, and that's not happening. Who knows where they're at? Who knows where anyone's at that point in the season?
Right.
We do know that Michigan State's returning 74% of production. Oh, that's 82nd in the country. So many new faces, and a lot of that returning production won't even see the field anymore. So it's going to be less than that. So I would argue that's maybe a little misleading. I would also argue that you could make a case that the MSU's projected win total at 4.5 seems just a slightly low. And to be fair, this team could win four games or less. You could see it happening. But I just wonder if that might tick up to 5 before we get going too much further next week, just because there is a lot of talent. I guess like Rutgers last year, though, it's like, who are these guys? Can they play? Can they fit? Can Mel make it work? But there are a couple layups, I think, on the schedule, or you'd like to think would be. If they're not, then you got big issues. And if can you find, you know, 3 more wins to beat that win total? Probably, because there are only 2 really, really tough ones, and at Miami and at Ohio State, Penn State a close third. So I don't know. How do you feel?
Are we doing predictions, or are we saving predictions?
No, predict it. What do you think? How many wins?
So, well, I'll get there. I look at this. First of all, I think your point is very strong. There's more pieces to play with this year. There's no question that the talent base is better than last year. Last year was arguably the least talented Michigan State team I've ever watched, and I remember Bobby Williams.
It wasn't close.
It was horrible. Just a really, really bad team. So the fact that they're not returning as much of their talent as some of these other teams is honestly kind of a good thing. I think we've seen a major talent uptick across the board, especially at some very important positions, offensive line, secondary, I mean, quarterback, to be honest. It's come a long ways. And I think that alone will lead to just a much more palatable product. And to be honest with you, I think, to your point, I only look at this schedule, this 12-game schedule, and see 2 games that I'm thinking there is a 80% chance or better Michigan State loses. And I'm not even probably there on Miami yet. Miami's another one of those programs where it's like I've heard they're back for 15 years.
Sure.
Ohio State is, I will never, ever again, probably in my lifetime, look at an Ohio State game and think, hey, Michigan State should be favored in this one. So I think this is I look at 4.5 and I think it's an easy over, because I see 2 layups, to your point, in Youngstown State and Western Kentucky. I see a handful of 50-50, if not better, games, and I see some tough ones. And what I try to do is break it down into buckets, right? Like 4 game chunks. Now, when I look at these first 4, at Northwestern, Youngstown at home, at Miami, Nebraska at home, I think at we go worst case scenario, right? It's got to be 2-2. It has to be 2-2.
Worst case could easily be 1-3.
But okay, so maybe not. Okay. Yeah, worst nightmare scenario. I look at like, so I would say if I'm being pessimistic, not like nightmare scenario, if I'm just being pessimistic, I think this is a 2-2 stretch. I see no reason Michigan State should not win one of, ultimately it boils down to one of Northwestern, Miami, and Nebraska. Seriously, they should win at least one of those games. You come out of that 2-2. Your next three are Western Kentucky, Rutgers, Indiana, and then you get a bye. And so I guess the next four, and then it's Michigan at home. Again, there's no reason they should not go 2-2 in that stretch.
Right.
No reason. So you're talking Western Kentucky, Rutgers, splitting one of Rutgers and Indiana, or taking basically one of Rutgers, Indiana, and Michigan. You get to those last four, Purdue, at Purdue, Maryland at home, at Ohio State, Penn State at home. This is where it gets tricky because I could easily see this going 1-3 and ending up at 5-7, which still hits the over for the record and probably still gets you into a bowl game. So again, we're talking like really, really bad case scenario. I still see five wins on here. Now, if I spin that forward and I go not like hyper optimistic, like psycho optimistic, I look at the first four, Northwestern, Youngstown, and Nebraska, those three of the first four, could easily see Michigan State winning those three games. Western at Rutgers, Indiana, Michigan. Maybe I'm crazy. I could see them beating Western, Rutgers, and Michigan. Indiana is the one. I would actually say Indiana is the third hardest game on the schedule. Right. So
maybe here.
You could be looking at those last four. And again, Purdue, Maryland, Ohio State, Penn State. I'll be pessimistic, or I'll cut that one down the middle and say 2-2. That's 8-4. Oof. I don't think that what I just laid out is outrageously optimistic. Like, it's optimistic. Don't get me wrong. It is. And it probably will not happen. Just for the record, probably will not happen. Mm-hmm. I don't think it is this insane thing to say that they could flirt with that level of competency. Anything over that, I think, is bananas. But I think 7-8 wins is extremely on the table. I would consider the season maybe not failure necessarily, but I personally would think, barring injury or anything outrageous, I would be disappointed in less than six wins. I just think this schedule lays out really favorably for them, not only with the teams, but with the cadence at which they play and the times at which they play these teams is really advantageous. Yeah. And so I would pound the table and say that I think this should be a 6-8 win team. I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah. I mean, I hear where you're coming from. I think as a team, as a program rebuilds from the ashes, because it was bad last year, there are going to be always some lumps as the team learns to win. And when you talk about 50-50 games that you talked about, there are a handful of them. I think you could qualify at Northwestern, Nebraska, at Rutgers, at Purdue, Maryland, and Michigan as 50-50 games, right? It's a lot. Does a team like with all these new faces who have never really played together or grown together, been a part of the program together for a majority of them, do they learn how to win that quickly? Maybe. I think it's more realistic to say you have to learn to take a few lumps before you start to take that next step. So it's not to say that they can't win all of them. It's not to say they lose all of them. It's just, I think it's you shouldn't be disappointed if they drop a couple of these 50-50 ones. It's just going to happen unless you're a team like the talent level of Ohio State. The Big Ten's clunky this year. You know, because the bottom isn't that bad. Like Rutgers was the bottom. And
Michigan State's the bottom.
Now we're the bottom, and you can look people in the eye and say, we're not that bad, right?
No, I agree.
So it's going to be clunky, and I say that, I mean, I think there are going to be a lot of teams, you know, Rutgers, Maryland, Michigan, and Michigan State that – you could pull a number out of the hat and they, one of them could finish with, four wins and one could finish with eight and two in between. So
yeah.
could be kind of wild here. Personally, I think the goal always needs to at least be a bowl game. The goal this year should definitely be a bowl game so that you can get more practices and reps for players, especially, by the way, if Anthony Russo wins the job. You might consider playing Peyton Thorne in the bowl game if they were to make it. I'm getting way ahead.
Yeah.
But, you know, start to prepping for the future. That's what you want. The bowl game is the goal. 6 wins is the goal. 6 wins before you play at Ohio State is the goal. Being 6-4 is the goal. And I think you can feel pretty good if they beat Northwestern to start the year. I think you should, depending on how it plays out, get a little nervous if they don't. Because I think too highly of Northwestern this year. So that one's, it's good. I think it's a, you'll learn a lot in that first game.
Yeah. I think when you look at the schedule, the way to break it down to your point was split it into over 50%, like 75% and higher, kind of this 50-50 bucket. And then like the, we're probably going to lose this game bucket. When I look at this schedule and I look at the probably going to lose this game bucket, I'm putting Ohio State, I'm putting Penn State and I'm putting Miami into that bucket, right? So those are 3 games that are off the table. So you basically now have 9 games in which you need to win 6. If you look at the we should really win this game bucket, I put Youngstown and Western in there. So you're 2-3 on the extremes.
Yep.
Which gives you 7. I'm doing my math right here.
You are.
7 games that are 50-50.
Gotta win.
You need to win 4 of the 50-50 games. You need to come out just on top. I don't think it's an outrageous ask to do that. But to your point, as these teams grow and take their lumps, very possible that they don't. I will also say that I think at 5-7, Michigan State probably gets into a bowl game. Just because they're going to have a million of them and they're from the Big Ten, that alone should get them in.
Uh-huh.
So, I'm pushing for 6 wins. I think if things click the right way, it could be better. And we'll see, but I want to make one more prediction. It has nothing to do with the wins and loss total. I'm going to predict that Anthony Russo wins the starting job.
Oh, okay.
I just think, even though maybe he's taking some reps behind Thorne, I think these guys want to win. They want to win now. And I don't know that the future, for better or worse, is going to factor into the decision-making as much as maybe a normal coaching staff's would. And I think that Russo fits the offense that they historically, at least the one that they ran last year, better than Thorne does. Frankly, everyone's like, oh, Thorne played well against Penn State. He did. There's no question about that. Still lost that game. And that's about all we've seen of him. So we got one game's worth of stuff to go on, whereas we have a lot of tape to go on with Russo for the good and the bad.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that is the guy. That's the guy to me that if you are serious about winning and winning right away, that you have to start. Because Thorne still has 4 years of eligibility left. I would personally rather turn it over to and make it a competition next year, throw it up to Faye, Kim, Thorne, the other kid that's coming in,
Hauser.
See, guys, go figure it out, win the job. But I think Russo to me is the no brainer. And if he's playing, I feel a lot better about their chances in Evanston next Friday.
Okay. I like it. I liked it. Unprompted. Here, one. If you could pick one non-Ohio State team to win the Big Ten, who would it be?
That's a good one. Realistically, probably Indiana. No, Wisconsin. Give me Wisconsin. I'd let Wisconsin do it. Get to the playoff. Like they flirt with it all the time. Like it would give us something to sell from Saeed Khalif being like, yeah, I built that team that just went to the playoff. So I don't know. And my soon-to-be wife is also a Wisconsin grad, so I think I could really dig that.
You're getting soft on us. It's the real ride.
Oh, man. There's nothing I can do. Whatever. It's better than Indiana. To have Indiana fans talk about a football, blah, that's the last thing I want.
They need to calm down, by the way. Also, last thing before we wrap. Ohio State, we were talking about, you know, could they contend for a natty? I think you just got to get to the Final Four, right? Just like in basketball.
Yeah.
And for me, you look around this conference, I don't see a way Ohio State loses two games.
No.
Conference.
No way. The only way they're losing one is if Stroud freaks out and they have to blow it. They're that good. It's just like Bama. It's just like Clemson. Like they're so good, especially in this Big Ten, where I think you've got a clear cut number one and then a lot of other stuff, which is all pretty good stuff, but like a clear cut one. Yeah. They've really got to blow it to not make it.
All right. Who they beat in the Big Ten championship game then? Wisconsin?
Yeah. I'm going with Wisconsin. I genuinely think Wisconsin's going to be the winner from the other side. I don't think anybody else is close to them.
I think Minnesota could surprise some people.
Of course you do. You're getting soft in your old age, too. We're really showing ourselves here.
You know,
our significant other's schools.
Exactly. All right, so let's wrap it up. Two quick takeaways. When do you think, though, the Michigan State could contend for a Big Ten championship? What year?
I'm going to say 20. Oh, Big Ten championship. I think they can be in the hunt graphic the year after next, 2023, to me, because you'll be in year two of your long-term quarterback. That talent that Tucker's brought in, I think, will really start to show itself then, because you'll have some mid to upperclassmen. I mean, and who knows? There's always Ohio State up there. But I think that's when, from a talent perspective, MSU will realistically be able to go into any game, maybe Ohio State notwithstanding, and feel like they're at least on the level with everybody else.
I like it. So we're now taking some, you know, you've listened to this. There is football this weekend. Enjoy it. You've made it. There's Big Ten football this weekend. Illinois at Nebraska. Take the under in that game. I know it's not fun, but it's my advice. And then also, we are taking submissions for why Northwestern stinks. If you're new to the program, just tweet at us or let us know however you think. Maybe send a pigeon. I don't know how else you get to us. Twitter's the only way. And why Northwestern stinks, and we will read it. It could be about not just the institution or the football program. It could be anything Northwestern related. I'm guessing we're going to get a few journalism jokes off.
I will read any and all submissions that contain Darren Revelle within legal limits. I will read them all. All right, John, listen, this was a good one. We're almost at an hour and a half for the people.
One more thing, Austin, and then I'll let you sign
it. Okay.
Remember the climb that D'Antonio years took to get to the top? It was a grind. But how awesome the payoff was after the grind. You are now You're in the grind. Enjoy the grind.
This is the grind. You're absolutely right. Enjoy the grind. That's a great, great way to sign off. All right, guys, as always, thank you for hanging with us. For John, this has been Austin, and we'll catch you next week.
All right. See you.